Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
All right. Good day, guys. Josh here with Orlando Entrepreneurs. I get to go around and talk with entrepreneurs all day long, hear their story, share their experience here on the show to show you guys that Orlando is a great place to build a company, to invest in a company, and to stay here once you build a really successful company. So guys, that's the purpose of the show, is to bring people together, bring entrepreneurs together, and highlight their successes, their victories, and their wins, and we could celebrate them together as a community. So today, I have Mr. Connor. Connor is the CEO and founder of a company called Find a Pawn. Connor, what is Find a Pawn? Tell us about your company and who you are.
Find a Pawn is a product search engine that is slowly disintermediating markets. We're removing the traditional middlemen and bringing the supply side and demand side economies to one another immediately, in seconds, as we advertise. We're starting with automobiles, and if you visit findapawn.com right now, you'll see that we have 17 million listings. That's 17 million automobile listings. That's, we eclipse our closest competitor, cars.com. They're at 5 million. So what we're trying to do is bring a new level of transparency to the internet and product searching in general.
All right. So that seems pretty interesting. So Auto Trader is a pretty big company. And yet you have four times, I can't do math on the spot, a lot more inventory than they do. How in the world does one do that with a startup company?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, because we really had to wait until the technology was kind of here. We're able to leverage some really affordable, really smart technology from Amazon. We can leverage they're called a T2 micro instance. They're a very small server. And what we're able to do is we're able to visit almost 48,000 different websites, essentially, with software programs. And these software programs visit these almost 50,000 websites daily, more than daily, and they refresh inventory. So we're literally getting to go everywhere on the internet and do all this work for you and put it all in one place.
See, that's pretty interesting. So if I'm in the market to buy a car, I could go on to findapawn.com and I could get a ton more inventory, more options, which means that I could find a better price, a better deal, a better value, because I have a lot more choices to look at. Is that right?
That's correct. And, you know, an interesting thing is with FindApawn, you're able to see a lot of options you might not see otherwise. Dealerships get to compete against one another, and they advertise different specials on different areas of the internet. So through FindApawn, you can actually leverage some of those specials you might not see. When we look at some of the, you know, how people actually search for their next car or, whatever it may be, we have 48% of people starting with a name brand. And then we look at about 20% of people starting with Google. When you use that 60% of the population is missing a tremendous amount of other sources that have these kind of hidden deals, if you will. So we're able to excavate those and bring them to the user and make sure that they're getting the best value and they know everything they need to know before making a critical financial decision.
Okay. So before we dive more into Find a Pawn, let's go back in time. Let's go back to how you, Connor, became an entrepreneur yourself, and talk to us about how you got into this world of finding and sourcing deals.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. I mean, it's a long history if we really wanted to go back to it, but I I made my first website when I was 12 years old. I had a little tennis racket string business, and to advertise my prices and options, I made a website on Homestead back with when there was Netscape and Navigator and dial-up. Don't mean to date myself, but that kind of grew the computer entrepreneurial passion there, and it just kind of grew through college, and it stayed with me, and went into a computer science major, and we went into everyone shops for a car. So if you're a software engineer and you're shopping for a car, you start to see, okay, I have to go on all these different platforms to try and find my perfect car, and you get pretty tired of the time, and then you realize, oh my God, well, I have to look at all these dealerships as well. So these are all these additional sites. And you knew there was a lot of time to be saved there. So at the end of the day, we just wanted to create something that's going to save, an enormous amount of time and money for the user. But it really starts back with just creating true efficiency through information. Kind of a roundabout answer.
Yeah. So so you took your first swing at things, literally a swing at things with helping people. you like how I did that, right? With their tennis rackets. Yeah.
Very quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, well, man. And it was funny too, because, at that time, it was great. People liked getting their tennis rackets strung really cheap, but no one could read, their options because it was still dial up and, flip phones was still green and black. So no one was really getting my live menu of options. So sadly ahead of the curve, but I was able to have a nice collection of RC cars. Yeah. So getting into computers early there really, really helped. And to kind of open up the realm of possibility for, okay, we can communicate digitally. Even if your main product is something completely different, you can still advertise your services and communicate effectively through another platform.
Got it. So tennis rackets, what was the next entrepreneurial adventure that you got into? Because I'm sure there was a series before this one hit.
Mm. Well, yeah. I mean, if you start programming, it's kind of hard to lose the bug. So I continued to play tennis through college and worked as a personal trainer at USF in Tampa to kind of supplement everything else and get through college. And I quickly realized that I had a few more clients that my class load could really handle. And there's no way that I could create new workout regimens for each client. So I created a matrix. I had 2-day clients and 3-day clients. And through this matrix, I was able to create 6 months of routines, and I could stagger the routines, and no client ever overlapped. No one ever saw that they were doing the same exercise. So they knew I wasn't just copying workouts. It worked that well. And I thought, I could make this into an app. But unfortunately, I still had, only that front end development knowledge. So I couldn't implement the back end server side knowledge required to create an intelligent, scheduled training platform. And not having that knowledge and depending on others, I wasn't really able to get to market as quickly as I needed to. And P90X was around the corner. So I kind of had to learn a hard lesson there. If you need something done right, do it yourself. But it was a good lesson learned.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, so playing tennis, you were making money in a passion that you were really excited about. In tennis, from an early age, you were restringing rackets. Then you started training people and then selling programs. When you graduated college, what did your career trajectory look like? What were you involved in? What did your life look like?
Mm. That's a great question. I mean, for the most part, I was heavily invested in my clientele here in Sarasota. I was a personal trainer at Lifestyles, and I was working towards a business degree. And looking at my prospects, and I was comparing my prospects to my passion, and seeing that, okay, I can kind of continue on this journey in business and I can continue on, or I can kind of give in to this hobby of computer programming and try and find a way, so to speak. And, you know, through that, I kind of kept up with some freelance work. Again, mostly front-end development, but I was lucky because now, you know, at this point in time, WordPress was becoming very popular. And if you could deal with the masochism of PHP, you could build these really impressive web applications through WordPress. And kind of caught on to that and saw rapidly that, you know, Matt Mullenweg did a really nice job at creating this platform. And you could do some kind of clever things to put together a really robust e-commerce site with a theme that was crisp and had unlimited design, you know, revisions, because it was essentially a theme from ThemeForest. And you could have all of this installed dynamically through a cron job on a, you know, $236 a month HostGator server. And that was kind of a light switch. So I said, okay, well, we can do this, and we can offer great service because the product makes itself in seconds. And that was the first real business that actually kind of had traction for me and kind of got me into the entrepreneur landscape.
Right on. And now, you know, talking to us about you as a software developer and engineer, you saw this like a pain point where if you were shopping for a car, it took you tons of time to go from site to site to site. And as engineers, I would say, are people, I'm not going to call like lazy minded, but like they want to find the fastest way to do it, and they only want to do it once, right? Is that pretty accurate?
No, you nailed it. I mean, Tom, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to make anybody upset, but like any engineer I know, they go, I only want to do this once, so I'm going to build a process and a machine to do it for me multiple times. So you did that for the car buying example. Like you did that.
Exactly. I mean, tell me the difference between laziness and efficiency, right? It's you know, you just want to do it once. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what we did. It was multiple searches. It was very redundant. And we really just thought that, you know, the advent of technology and the internet being where it is, there's just no reason why any person shouldn't be able to view what is essentially a fixed data set on the internet, right? It's not a hard question. There's the United States is a very big place, but there's only so many cars for sale at one point in time. And we're able to do so many things with technology. The fact that we couldn't just get every car for sale on a single domain was just, it just didn't make sense, right? So yeah, we set out to make that a reality.
Sure. So now that you have this arsenal, this database where now you can look at every car, talk to us about maybe a first time experience of you or someone going into a dealership armed with your app or armed with your information, and they're showing the salesperson, no, this car is for selling. You know, give us a success story of a customer armed with your information and going into a dealership.
So I'll leave the VIN numbers out of it, but essentially we're really happy. So we started marketing in very beginning of March, and we've had three really positive testimonials. Two individuals actually purchased the car through FindUpon because of FindUpon, and the third person, it was actually the second person, they ended up leasing a vehicle, but they still got to the dealership because of FindUpon. And what's interesting is that, and I had no idea until we built out this platform that, you know, you've got about 48,000 dealerships over the United States, and all of them advertise very differently, and they work together differently, and they don't work together differently, and they all have these different types of marketing tactics. And if you're able to see some tactics, you can leverage them. So the first example is of a user looking for a Honda Odyssey. And this Honda Odyssey was advertised on a very popular car listing platform for, you know, a certain amount. And that was what you would see if you search Google. You would see this Honda Odyssey advertised on this listing platform for X. But if you went to the third page, or if you went to one of these listing platforms and clicked this Honda Odyssey and then decided to actually go to the dealer's site and then do the math on their site, you would see that you could save about $4,000. So through FindUpon, this user was able to just come to our site, perform a single search, look at this Honda Odyssey, see that there are actually five different sources offering it for sale, and go to the dealership and say, yeah, this is the price I saw offered, and this is the price that, you know, we expect today. And it was a done deal. You know, thankfully that person was able to get to us first and didn't just kind of go with the first go and try and haggle away. So that was a win for us. We felt happy we were able to save some money there. The second one was a time issue. This individual was very specific in their criteria. They wanted a very specific BMW 6 Series, and they were willing to travel for it, and they were willing to do what it is, but they just needed to see the depth, right? So they were searching. We run a lot of our marketing campaigns from Florida, but they still need to see that BMW all the way out in California. And if you search a lot of automobile search engines now, it's a requisite for zip code, and then expanding back out is kind of troublesome. So we were able to give that visibility immediately. And the last one's my favorite. The last one is actually it's pretty unique. Now, this person, this was an independent dealership. Now, the way FindUpon works is we have internet robots, and like, as we said before, they just kind of go out. They find the products and they bring them back. And for a lot of independent dealerships, they don't have the marketing budget to advertise on the auto giants, to advertise on cars.com, to advertise on Auto Trader or Car Gurus. So forget page three, right? They're not found. But our robots were able to find them. And because our robots were able to find them, we were able to show that they were a better price than many other competitors for this certain vehicle. So we were just able to, it's not that, you know, this dealership had a bunch of competitive pricing or anything like that. It was just that this dealership was able to get the exposure necessary to show their inventory to a willing buyer. So that was probably, our biggest win, basically to give that dealership a voice, you know, or some time in the light.
So the value is not only for the customer who's looking for a car, but also for the dealership who may not have a huge marketing spend to actually say, I've got a great vehicle that really fits your needs, and it's at a better price than the other guys. So you're leveling the market and equalizing the market for the buyer and for those selling cars, right?
That's what we're trying to do, yeah. That's correct. And it starts with automobiles, and you know, we're looking at carrying that on into some other markets, but we're really enjoying our time in the automobile market. Working with dealerships, we see how we can help them better understand some of the wholesale market. We're looking at connecting more dealerships, whether it's a regional or within the same auto group. And even on the demand side of FindUpon. And we want to make sure that everyone's getting the best deal. So we have a lot of data. So we're able to, you know, work with the user a little bit and recommend some pricing if things don't really fall within their want or their ask. So it's good getting to see what we can do. The more feedback we get, the more we know we can do.
Awesome. So before we go into how you're building this in terms of your partnerships and your funding events and some exciting things that entrepreneurs strive for, why did you choose Orlando as a place to headquarter and build this business?
That's actually a great question. And I'm glad you asked it. I came to Orlando for many reasons. One of which is actually triathlon. I like to race triathlon. It's Orlando, the National Training Center is a phenomenal place to train for triathlon. It's the second best in the United States. But beyond that, Orlando has a really terrific technical community, and it's kind of overlooked. But between the entertainment and theme parks, and then also the private defense, you end up having a really nice concentration of strong technical knowledge. And it's if you have some folks who aren't super keen on the industry they're in, and they want to do something kind of fun and different, it's great because you have a real creative, free mindset to kind of set things loose on. So it's been a great place to collaborate. So that's a major point. The second major point as well, though, is that I found that if you do travel and you do go to all your hot spots, right? Your Silicon Valley, your LA, your Utah, and if you go into areas of Texas, real hot spots for object-oriented programming, machine learning, natural language processing, you find that the talent's all really, really, really strong. But you can get this really, a one-of-a-kind drive, I find, in Orlando, because there's so much opportunity, there's so much new things to do. So I really appreciate that here. Between the space and the resources, it's been a great place. A lot of people really just want to learn and want to grow and want to develop. So we're happy here.
So you came to Orlando. One thing that really attracted you is you're a competitive athlete doing triathlons. Now, a triathlon is three events, right?
Yeah.
Biking, running, and swimming. Okay.
Yep.
So Orlando has one of, you told me this, the second.
Yeah.
You explained it. You'll do it better.
I was going to say it's pretty brief. I should probably give Orlando more credit. But Orlando is the second best place to train and race for triathlon in the United States. It's second to Boulder, Colorado, where you would go and train for the Olympics. And it has to do with the temperature and the humidity and then the altitude that Orlando has, right? So you're, as a cyclist, you're able to climb and really push to similar extents, at least from a power perspective, that you would from a Boulder, Colorado. The only thing you don't get is the thin air. That's fine. You get thicker air down here. It's much harder. So it's a terrific place to train, and you have a lot of talented triathletes in Central Florida, especially with all the lakes. Central Florida Tri Club especially puts out a lot of top quality athletes, juniors and adult. So it's a terrific place to get good at multisport. But yeah, triathlon is pretty brutal. I don't know. Have you ever done one, Josh? Have you ever fared?
I have not. I'm not a very good swimmer. I can run okay. I can bike okay. But I sink pretty fast, unless I have a surfboard under me.
Noted. Okay. Yeah. Swim was always my rough patch too. But it's nice. You can't really win it on the swim, but you also can't lose it, right? So you just gotta get it done, and then hop on that bike. So
yeah. If you guys ever see me in the water, you might want to throw me a life raft and a nice cocktail. That's how I like to do it.
Deal.
Yeah. So Connor, talk to us. So you chose Orlando. You found this great ecosystem of technology-driven people. You found a lot of creative individuals that come out of the universities here, and you found great talent here and great people to connect with. Talk to us about the building process of Find Upon. Talk to us about how are you paying for this and how are you building this?
So, the first year, year, first year, 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 Actually, well, technically the first two, for technically first 2 years, where it was out of my own pocket, and it was more of a I believe in this, and this is something I need to do, and I'm going to grow with AWS, you know, as it becomes available, and that only went so far, right? So I kind of got to a point, and then I realized, well, if you want to build, you know, you want to do something really great, you're going to need people, and you're going to need to kind of spread the idea and the message and the vision. So I took some time off from programming and decided to learn a little bit about creating a pitch deck and really looking at the technology I was creating objectively and saying, okay, this might be really cool and helpful, but, you know, is this something that can become a business? So once I looked at that, I was able to say, okay, well, we need to think about cash flows and if this thing is going to be able to continue on or get taken over. And I talked to a couple close friends and colleagues that I was working with, fellow software engineers, some peers, and it looked like a worthy pursuit. And two friends especially really chimed in and saw a lot of value in this. So, you know, we kind of decided, all right, well, let's go ahead and give this a go. Let's take it seriously. Let's create a pitch deck. Let's find the value proposition. And let's make sure we're solving a real problem. Let's make sure we have a real solution. And let's make sure that it's scalable and it'll last and it'll be effective. And the three of us kind of decided upon that it was. At the time, one was actually an intern of mine at an EHR, and a really, really hungry individual by the name of Chad Sigmund. And he had a friend who was also a competitive cyclist and, you know, top-ranked hack hire-y, and also went to Rollins. So we said, you know, met with him and, you know, also loved automobiles and loved programming and the stars aligned. So we said, okay, we can definitely build this thing. And we think we can make it, you know, worthwhile venture. And we started, putting ourselves out there and taking a dive and saying, okay, this is our business plan and this is our pitch deck. And maybe we know what we're doing, maybe we don't, but let's see what happens. And, you know, rubber hit the road. We got a lot of questions. We got a lot of skepticism. And at the end of the day, it made us really strong. And we learned a ton about business, about technology, and just about being effective. So it was it's been a good road. And some of that was pitching, and some of that was raising money, which you have to do if you really want to reach a large group of people. And you know, platforms like this, podcasts, as well as you know, open mics and pitch decks, and just meetups, finding niche meetups, like for us it was Cars and Coffee and Ace Cafe, and finding evangelists, you know, putting a useful thing in their hands. It's been hard to go wrong, you know.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting point. You went out pitching, looking for capital partners, right? And you had these conversations in the process of pitching, in the process of getting out there saying, we need capital partners, we need money. You actually learned a whole bunch because of the questions they were asking you. Successful people asking you questions because they're like, if I'm going to give you my money, you better be able to answer these questions. And in the process, you learned a bunch. So that's number one. That's a really good point. Do you have something to say to that? Because I mean, You dropped a lot of value in that. I want to really make sure the audience hears this.
Yeah, I mean the first thing that we learned, which was a hard kind of pill to swallow, was you have to be able to answer the question, how does it make money? Because it has to be able to sustain itself. If it costs money, it must make money. So we have, fortunately, a pretty lean product. So we didn't need to go too far to find how it makes money. But if you really want the product, then we learned, okay, that's nice. So that kind of gets us to this point, maybe where we could even sustain ourselves. But if you have this desire or dream and you want this product to affect a lot of people, you know, you're going to need to probably have a lot more money. And be able to generate a lot more and answer a lot more questions. And you're going to have to learn more than just about what you created. And you're going to have to understand that it's a balance and it's an ecosystem. That it has to be, you have, what you create has to be useful, it has to give back, and it can give. So that was, you know, the first bit we got. And then we afterwards learned about everything that kind of comes after that, right? So you have a business plan and you think this is how much you might need to get the product to 2 million, you know, let's say, or let's dial it back even more. Let's just say 10,000, 50,000 users a month. This is what we need to do. And this is the kind of trajectory we think we can create. So even when you're there and you have all those things lined up, it's probably never really what you thought, and things are going to kind of come along. So, you know, the second thing we learned is have many plans and be very agile, because, you know, if you have many plans, you always have a direction. But if you have only one, you're going to be doing a lot of thinking and planning. So that was another great takeaway. And then probably the last big thing too is just not to be afraid of your vision and what you want to do. Because at the end of the day, whether you're a founder or, you know, co-founder or someone just, you know, you're an evangelist or you think something's really cool, as long as you think what you're doing has the correct moral compass and you're happy doing it and you think it's doing a total good, I think that's really all that matters. If you're following that total good mentality and you know you're helping, then you can just pursue it and feel good.
Awesome. And then on top of all that, which is hard running a business, fundraising, and you guys secured some capital, you also joined groups of auto enthusiasts, because where are you going to learn from your customers? You might as well hang out with groups of people who buy lots of cars, right? So what did you learn doing that?
We learned about the necessity for specificity. If we thought we didn't already have that as, you know, software developers and engineers, but you really start to appreciate the nuance of the objects you're curating when you speak to the people that interact with them or that saved up 5 years to buy it. And you kind of get, you understand how to build loyalty when you speak with that person. And, you know, there's no better customer than a loyal customer. So when you understand what the perfect use case is, there's really nothing better. So that's helped us a lot, you know, in how we have people search and how we present automobiles and in how we can help, you know, product buyers and product sellers coagulate with other product buyers and product sellers. So that was very helpful for us at the end of the day. And it's great to get that user feedback. There's nothing better than just straight user feedback, whether it's an icon or whether it's color or whether it's things they like or don't like. You know, if you don't get out from behind your screen, you know, you'll never get it where you want to go.
Now, right now, you're traveling up and down the coast of Florida visiting car dealerships because you have a service to them as well. So you provide a service to the customer, find better cars, find, you know, good quality cars and, you know, good deals. But you're also providing a service to the dealerships themselves with the data you are collecting and sharing with them. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, we kind of just, and it's funny because we're kind of learning as we go here. I guess that's what happens when you just follow passion. But we found that we were able to collect over now, you know, 2+ years, we've collected some really tremendous data. We've collected a really sizable quantity of data since then. And we're able to show some insights that not might otherwise be available. And what we're finding is right now we're able to provide some really interesting up-to-date market automotive market insights that you really couldn't get couldn't get otherwise. And we're speaking with dealerships who are working with all different types of platforms, whether it's DealerTrek, Dealer.com, Cars.com, a spinoff of Cox Automotive, LotLinks, Vast. There's just a smorgasbord of big data analytic providers. And what we're finding, though, is that each provider can only provide intelligence on the listings that they publish. So because FindUpon is able to provide intelligence on automotive listings, on every listing on the internet, we implicitly are able to provide a lot more data than other individuals. So what we're doing is now taking, I don't want to say taking the haggle out of it, but we're taking the nonsense out of the pricing game, because we can say, okay, here's every Jeep Wrangler for sale in the United States. This is a very simple, it's a very large spreadsheet to look at, but it's very straightforward. And at the top, we can provide you a very simple summary, and Josh, I can send you these login creds when we're done here, but you can just simply see this is the min, this is the max, and this is the average, kind of no nonsense. And it's nice. It's making things easy for dealerships, because it's more of a conversation now with their user, because it's not usually the user, with the customer, because it's not a haggle. It's just a matter of fact. If you went on the internet and you did all the research you could possibly do, this is what you would find. And what we're getting from dealerships is that oddly enough, you have the consumer is actually kind of grateful that they just saved all this time, and it's okay. Well, thank you. Now let's figure out these options and maybe waive the title and tag fee.
Nice. Well, I think this is great. I love having conversations with entrepreneurs who are building, who have built great things. You are on an incredible trajectory, providing people the ability to, buy cars and with more intelligence and more actionable insights, and then also providing a service to the dealers to show them how people are buying and how to optimize that buying cycle. So, man, we applaud you here in Orlando. We want to highlight you and just share that you're on the right path, doing a great thing. From coming up with the idea, self-funding it, then getting capital partners going on fundraising tours, and now building it and now going on tours to get dealers as your customers. So you're out there hustling, and we want to help support you and say great job, Connor.
Well, we really appreciate it. Appreciate the support, Orlando and Josh Wilson.
Yeah, no problem. So, man, is anything else come to mind that you'd like to talk about that maybe we didn't share here? Or is there anybody that you want to give a shout out to on the show just to say thank you?
100%. Yeah, no. I definitely have to say thank you to R.C. Williams and Juliana over at 1 Million Cups. The Kaufman organization has been really great to us, so we really, really appreciate that. Rupert Minot's been a really great mentor to us. Dennis Page as well, another great mentor. And Jason Wade as well, from an evangelist standpoint. Also, too, even Abby Vias, just kind of giving us some of the black and white curriculum for economic progression. That was also really tremendous. So I could probably go on at that point. So a lot of things to give there. And if there's one thing that I could say or communicate and get across to people, especially young entrepreneurs or anyone who has an idea to make something better, it's that don't let an initial dismissal deter you. Just double check your math and then do it again, and then if it seems to be right, consider it. But definitely go against the grain, and if you feel like what you're doing is worthwhile and it's going to save time or money or make someone's existence better, definitely do it.
Cool. Well, Connor, thank you for taking time on your sales tour, on the road right now, and you know, sitting up at coffee shops and talking with us, just taking a moment to share your journey. So we appreciate it. Thank you for, you know, having a conversation with us and what you're doing inside Orlando. If people want to find you, your business, where could they find you? How could they contact you? How could they get a hold of you?
Yeah, 100%. Go to findupon.com. And from there, you know, enjoy the site. Or just, you can email me personally at Connor, C-O-N-N-O-R, at findupon.com, or info@findupon.com. And we're happy to entertain any and all feedback.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Connor, thanks for coming on the show. Ladies and gentlemen in the audience, fellow entrepreneurs, people who support the entrepreneurial community, maybe some awesome investors who want to invest in Orlando entrepreneurs, just thank you for listening into the show. We really appreciate you. And this show wouldn't be a show without an audience. So we appreciate your ears and listening in on this. So until the next episode, guys, we enjoy working with you and we enjoy being a part of the entrepreneurial community. We hope you have a wonderful day and we'll talk to you on the next show. Connor, we'll see you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.